Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, welcome to the Oil Spills Podcast for Tuesday, December 4th, 2018. I'm Craig Ellingson, the host. With me today is Derek Van Deest, a hockey writer for the Edmonton Sun and the Edmonton Journal. Good morning, Derek.
Morning, Craig. How are you doing?
Is it still morning? We're recording late on a Tuesday because the Oilers played last night. Usually the habit is to record it on a Monday, but, you know, we wanted stuff to happen. And stuff did happen. We're going to talk about Connor McDavid not being in the lineup for the Oilers last night. He was sick. I mean, players get sick and there's injuries and stuff like that, but Connor McDavid's been playing a lot. In fact, he hasn't missed time since he was a rookie when he broke his collarbone. So we'll talk about that, and we'll also talk about the Oilers and having a new team eventually joining the NHL. The news came out today that the Board of Governors has approved the Seattle expansion franchise to start play in 2021. So 2.5 years, there'll be the Seattle Super Duper Sonic. No, they probably can't take the basketball names.
I think Seattle Breakers was out there. And then,
that's an old WHL name.
I think it's an old WHL name. And there's
the Totems, which might not be the best choice. Mm. The Metropolitans was the old school name from 100 years ago when they last won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, there's a Metropolitan Division now, so I don't know.
Then they'd have to move them to the Metropolitan Division, and we have nothing to talk about.
So I don't know if the NHL would allow you to name yourself after one of their divisions. But it's actually, to me, I think this is long overdue, to be honest. Seattle getting a team in Seattle. I love that city. I think it's one of the best cities in the United States. I've been down to Seattle many, many times. And it just makes for a natural rivalry there with Seattle and Vancouver. It should ramp up pretty quickly. And it just makes sense to me. And I know they had issues with the building. They're going to have to do something with that Key Arena. The Key Arena was designed as a basketball arena. So I know my first trip to Seattle was when I was working in Medicine Hat, covering the Medicine Hat Tigers. And they went on the U.S. trip, and I was invited to come along with the Tigers on the U.S. trip, and we went to Seattle, and the Seattle Thunderbirds used to play in that arena. And because it was designed as a basketball arena, the ice surface went kind of underneath the second tier of seating. So if you sat behind one of the nets, you were actually looking, you couldn't see the net below you. So that was kind of an interesting dynamic that they had there in Seattle. Kind of like, I think it was in Phoenix where they had the similar situation where the ice kind of went underneath the second tier. But so are they going to have to rip that up and make it more of a hockey-friendly facility, which obviously I think they're going to spend something like $700 million.
Yeah, they started working. I think they started working on that. Was it a year ago at least, if not more? I remember the news coming out. I think it was the summer of 2017 when their plan to renovate the arena came out.
Yeah.
But we should talk about Connor McDavid first.
Sure, we can start there.
Because, you know, I mean, as exciting as it is to have a nice short hop to Seattle, the whole Connor McDavid being sick last night, I assume he has the flu. I think that's what it is. Obviously, he's not in the lineup, and that changes a lot for the Oilers. Connor McDavid factors in on a lot of offense, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you still have Leon Draisaitl and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins as your other top two centers, and those aren't bad centers to have. But I think what the problem we saw last night against Dallas was they don't have a lot of other scoring on the wings. And Draisaitl didn't have Leon Draisaitl to play alongside him on the top line.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think Oilers fans got a glimpse last night of the nightmare that this team would have been had they not won the Connor McDavid draft lottery.
Oh, come on. Maybe Taylor Hall would have won the MVP here. Yeah. Come on.
it's kind of scary to think. If and we've talked about this ad nauseum. It's talking about how if Connor McDavid goes down for any length of time, the Oilers are in big trouble. And we saw that last night. He was out one game, and they just couldn't generate anything offensively. I thought defensively they played pretty well. I thought Kostin had a pretty good game. But it was just a matter of time because Dallas was able to kind of lean on the Oilers and lean on the Oilers, and the Oilers couldn't get anything going the other way. And you're right. Leon Draisaitl can drive a line, but he doesn't have a player like him to drive it with, which is this situation with Connor McDavid. And Draisaitl's going to finish with the 85, 90 points this year. So, you know, he takes a lot of heat, but it's a situation that you need some players to play with, and I think that really was illustrated last night. And it's a situation where the Oilers have to look at this and go, okay, we're in big trouble if this guy goes down for an extended period of time because he's such a big part of the offense. It's like almost like 40% of the offense comes through Connor McDavid. But it was a scary thought, thinking about, wow, what happened if the Oilers didn't get this guy in the draft lottery, and what'll happen if God forbid something happens to him and he goes down for an extended period of time. But I think the Oilers have to find a way when he's not in line to grind out 2-1 wins, 1-0 wins. They have to really, really play defensively, and they tried to do that last night. But yeah, you need other guys to step up. You need other guys to create offense. You need other guys to look like they're threatening in some way, and you have an entire line with the Edmonton Oilers that go out there a lot. They kind of create a lot of things, but they haven't scored in forever, and that's that third line with Lucic and Cassian and Brodziak, and your fourth line's not producing anything at all. So if you're not getting anything off your top two lines, the Oilers are in big trouble. So they have to kind of find some way somehow to generate offense outside of Connor McDavid.
You know, and like you were alluding to, we have been talking about this all year. Like, obviously, Connor McDavid has factored in a ridiculous amount of their points. I mean, I can't remember what the exact breakdown is heading into this podcast, but I mean, early in the year, he set an NHL record for, you know, how many goals for the Oilers he was in on. Was it 11?
I think it was 11 or 12, and he wasn't very proud of that record. He was. I remember. You know, I think we all saw it when he was asked about it. He just shrugged it off because he knew that he can't be in on every goal that the Oilers scored this year, and so it's a matter of they have to share the wealth offensively, and they're not asking them to chip in with three or four goals a night. They're asking for one or two goals a night, and that's good enough probably for the Oilers to win if they can. Bottom half of that lineup can contribute, or a defenseman can contribute every now and then, because they're not getting a lot of scoring from their back end either. So I think they have to try and find offense some way. And it is only a goal or two a night, and I think the Oilers will find ways to win games, because just the way they've tightened up defensively now, they're a defensive-minded hockey team for the first time maybe in a long, long time. I think maybe since Ralph Kruger was here for those 48 games, they're a defensive-minded hockey team that has to win games, has to win low-scoring games.
I know you had Ken Hitchcock, the historically defensive-minded coach, to be their coach. It should be interesting to see how it all plays out over time. When talking about taking McDavid out of the lineup, part of me wants to think back to the Gretzky days in the 80s, when Gretzky's young, let's say it's the early 80s before they won any cups. What if you took him out of the lineup? How would that affect that lineup? Of course, we're never going to know.
Yeah.
But there were times when Gretzky was out of the lineup. Mind you, he didn't really miss a lot of time until later on after they had won some cups. And clearly having, we can't compare, there's no comparing the teams. But having, a lineup that has, players to fall back on to carry the load, clearly that team did. But today I think about the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the Maple Leafs didn't have Austin Matthews for a few games. And they did just fine. In fact, they're practically in first place, minus Austin Matthews. But again, they have the depth. They have the pieces in place that the Oilers just don't have. They have other scoring threats. They just signed William Nylander, who hasn't even played yet this season. So clearly the Oilers still have some work to do, particularly Peter Chiarelli, assuming he's the general manager following this season.
Yeah, and the situation is when you lose a star player, when you lose a guy like McDavid, that opens up whatever it is, 20, 21, 22 minutes of ice time a night. And you got to fill that with somebody. And so that means everyone in the lineup is probably going to get a couple more minutes or a few more minutes, or if you're on a second line, you might get three or four more minutes. And it's what you do with that extra ice time that matters. It's you're going to get more of an opportunity to get out there. You're going to get more of an opportunity to get in the game. You're going to get more of an opportunity to get scoring chances and get shots on net and kind of play the game. And I think you see it in Toronto is when Matthews went down, other guys stepped up and filled that ice time, and they took advantage of that extra ice time they were getting. And you're right, the Leafs didn't miss a beat. They're a very exciting young team, scores a lot of goals. I think defensively they hang their goalie out to dry a lot, but he's making some huge saves for them. So, yeah, they're a fun team to watch, but they have that depth that they can provide, and they have those guys that step up. The Oilers don't have that, or they didn't have that last night. They didn't show that last night that they have when you're guys are getting an extra 2 or 3 minutes a night, or they're getting an extra 4 or 5 shifts, whatever it'd be, to fill that ice time. They weren't making the most of it, and they weren't making the most of their opportunities. And I think that's important, because when you lose a guy like that, it has to be by committee. It's not going to be one guy that's going to take over and do what Connor McDavid does. No person in the world can do what Connor McDavid does, but you have to chip in by committee, and that means that you have to get in 2 or 3 more shots with that extra ice time. And if everyone does that, then I think the Oilers may be able to kind of fill that void for a while. But they couldn't do that last night, and I think that's a situation where, one, they're probably surprised that he wasn't in the lineup, and that shock value kind of takes a little while. Now you're wondering, oh no, what are we going to do without Connor McDavid? Once you get in the game, you really have to make those extra minutes count, and the Oilers did not do that last night.
Do you think maybe, let's say McDavid is out for a few games. I know he won't be, it's the flu. But do you think it would be a good thing, like a good training exercise or something, for the Oilers to try to see how they do without McDavid in the lineup? Because injuries do happen.
Yeah.
Illnesses do happen. You know, he's human. He's not made out of titanium or whatever. Do you think it would be a good experience for the rest of the players to see if they can blossom somehow? Do we have the right players to do that? I guess that's the big question that hangs over us when we're talking about this and the team all the time.
Yeah, it does. It presents opportunity, and then you really kind of can look at the roster and see what guys take that opportunity and run with it. And a lot of times players are discovered, or their abilities are discovered because of an injury. You look at Cam Talbot a few years ago. Nobody would have known Cam Talbot was as capable as he was had Henrik Lundqvist not gone down for that extended period of time in New York. He stepped in, played extremely well throughout that period, and suddenly the Oilers go, hey, that guy could be our starting goaltender because he's shown that he can carry that load. That happens a lot with goalies when you have to step in and take over. For players, yeah, it's a matter of now, okay, this guy's been pegged as a third-line guy. He's a third-line guy. He's always been a third-line guy. Suddenly there's a spot open on the second line as everyone kind of moves up because Connor McDavid is out. And then you see what he can do on the second line or on the second power play or on the first power play where you don't get power play time. And you're right. It is a good test. It is a good evaluator of the rest of your roster when you want to know whether you can move a guy up in a spot, move him from the second to third, or move him from the third to the fourth, or from the fourth to the third. And it'll be interesting to see when he does come back how much strength he does coming back. So maybe his minutes are kind of limited in St. Louis if he does come back. And then that's also an opportunity for someone else to step in. But you're right, it is a good indicator. It does kind of reveal which players are ready to take on an extra role or an extra step. And I think sometimes players get comfortable in their role. And then when you ask for a little more out of them, there just isn't any more to give. But I think there's other guys that are dying to get an extra opportunity, or dying to get some extra shifts, or dying to get some time on the power play where they otherwise wouldn't. And if they make the most of those minutes and the most of those opportunities, then you can always go back to them and say, hey, you know what? We may not be as badly off with Connor McDavid because so-and-so proved that he could step in and give us some good minutes when we increase his ice time.
You know, I can't help but think, and maybe this isn't the best analogy because he came in as a rookie, but, you know, Elias Pettersson in Vancouver, mm-hmm. coming out of nowhere, he wasn't on the radar to be doing what he's doing with the Canucks this year, and to the point where here we are a third of the way through the season, and this guy is easily their best player. Like, you know, he didn't start on the third line or whatever, but he probably did at the beginning of the season. He's not Drake Kajula or, you know, Jujhar Khaira coming out of nowhere to all of a sudden lead the team in scoring. But that's the kind of player, you know, and there are examples of that throughout the league where a player steps up with an opportunity. And, yeah, I'm not thinking goalies. That's a great example with Cam Talbot. But, you know, when you're looking for that offense and all of a sudden, hey, look, this guy grabbed it and ran with it.
Oh, it's true. And Peterson probably wouldn't have gotten that opportunity on a better team. And I think that kind of takes is part of the equation as well. Let's say he showed up and he was part of the, you know, Pittsburgh Penguins or the Tampa Bay Lightning, where they have guys, already established guys in the first and second line. He would play third line minutes and he wouldn't be doing what he's doing in Vancouver. Vancouver doesn't have those established guys. They're going through a rebuilding phase. And so they have to play this guy in the top line and they have to play him on the top power play. And he's thriving there. And then he was able to kind of show these guys, oh, well, he's capable of playing on that first line. But it is all about opportunity, because if he was playing on a more veteran-laden team, someone that has, you know, maybe even the Maple Leafs, he might get lost in that shuffle if he went there. And they have so many talented players. They have so many guys that can score. Yeah, he wouldn't be getting the minutes that he's getting. So I think that's a very good analogy that you bring up a guy like that, because it's about opportunity. And this game is often about opportunity. And he's getting it now because there is no one else there. And I think he's making the most of it. And he's really opening a lot of eyes. I think people knew how talented he was coming in, but I just don't think they expected this out of him.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, the timing of McDavid's illness. I mean, I know the flu is going around. You know, whether it's in the general population or hockey teams, it happens this time of year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Oilers had come off three wins at home, you know, all very good wins. You know, and Hitchcock's record with, you know, 4-1-1, I think. Well, now they're 4-2-1 with him as coach. You know, I was preparing to try to figure out how to work a book in. I'm reading about Babe Ruth right now, a biography from the mid-70s that was written about him. You know, he played in the Red Sox before he went to the Yankees, and, you know, he played on the Red Sox teams that, you know, won the World Series 1918, that started the curse of the Bambino, obviously. You know, they won the World Series with him in 1918. The next year, like, Babe Ruth was a star. He was the star player of the Red Sox, the World Series champs. Guy could pitch, and obviously he could hit because he could do it all for them. But 1919, they were not a good team. They finished well out of the playoffs. And, you know, then the year after, the Red Sox sold them to the Yankees. But, you know, trying to figure out the psychology behind a team, and, you know, obviously these Oilers with Connor McDavid aren't reigning champions like Babe Ruth's Red Sox. But, you know, they went through struggles just like teams do today. You can't explain why the Red Sox fell off. We couldn't really explain why last year, why the Oilers couldn't return to their playoff form from 2017. I know. Anyway, I wanted to sneak that in somehow. Maybe I should have saved that for some other time. No, maybe I'll bring it up again. No, I'll finish reading the book, find out what happened to Babe Ruth.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting dynamic. And when you have a star player that's so much better than everyone else, when things are tough, when things are going not well for your team, you have a tendency as a player to basically just turn to the star player and say, okay, you get it done. And I remember growing up watching basketball. I was a huge basketball fan watching up, and I grew up watching Michael Jordan. And I remember the Bulls for a lot of years were bad under Michael Jordan. They really struggled for a lot of years under Michael Jordan because they would just defer to him. The team would say, okay, well, Michael, go ahead and do it. And it wasn't until he got guys like Scottie Pippen and Scott Kerr and those guys that they kind of built the team around him. And I sense a little bit of that with Connor McDavid, in a sense that if I'm sitting beside Connor McDavid and I'm whoever, a guy in the third line, a guy in the fourth line, I'm just looking at him to get it done. And I think that it's just that psychology of playing with a star player. You just expect them to go out there, and when the game is tight or when you need a goal, that he's going to go out there and get it done. And star players want to be that guy. They'll want to go out there and get it done. But I think too many of the Oilers are deferring to that. Others are just saying, well, okay, well, he'll get it done for us. That's why he's the star player. That's why he's making $12.5 million. But I think the Oilers need other guys to try and step up and because Connor McDavid can't do it every night. And I remember seeing a clip of Phil Jackson in a timeout, and it was kind of in the same situation, and he was yelling and screaming at his team, saying, "Michael Jordan can't do it every night. Someone else has to step up and do something." And I think that's the challenge to the Oilers here right now, especially with Connor McDavid. If he's not feeling up to par, even if he comes back against St. Louis, he may not be 100%. The challenge has to be out there to say, you know what, he can't do it every night, so who's going to step up and do it tonight? And I think a lot of those guys on that Oilers roster have to kind of look inside themselves and say, well, why can't it be me? Why can't I go out there and have a great shift and have the game of my life and contribute to this team winning? We can't just always defer to Connor McDavid, and I think that happens a lot when you have a star player. I've seen it in sports all the time, different types of sports. I'm sure it happened back in 1918 with Babe Ruth. They just defer to him and say, well, he'll get it done. And that always kind of creates problems, because you can't win it alone if you're a star player. You need help. And you look back to the days when Michael Jordan was the best player in the NBA, but he still needed some help, and he still needed a good team around him.
I haven't finished the book yet, but I think part of the problem with Babe Ruth back then was he partied too much.
Oh, yeah.
Man, that guy was out till 6 in the morning every night. But you couldn't get away with that today, I think.
No, you probably couldn't. Not to the extent you did back then, I'm sure.
So let's switch back to Seattle.
Okay.
Seattle, nice town.
Great city. One of my favorites.
Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
Next door to Vancouver, practically. Mm-hmm. So automatic rivalry there.
Yeah.
But importantly for us, there'll be a new rival for the Edmonton Oilers.
Well, what's exciting is that the Oilers get to go down there, I think, two times a year, depending on how they kind of break down the division schedule. But now you're looking at a road trip. And I think, like, the Oilers can talk about rivalries all they want when they're going in and talking about how they didn't want to stay in the Pacific and they didn't want to move into the Central, because you would have had to move both them and Calgary into the Central. You can't just move the one. They both would have to come into the Central, and then you had to do a little bit of shifting around. To me, it's all economical. I think it's a lot cheaper and a lot easier to get to California than it would be to get to Missouri to play St. Louis, than it would be to get to even Dallas. Dallas is kind of a ways away. It would be to get to Chicago. So I think they looked at that and they said, well, if we get to California, let's say the Oilers go on a 5-game road trip or a 4-game road trip, and they go Seattle, San Jose, then you go out to LA, the two teams in LA. Like, it's an easy road trip. It's everything is right there. If you did that in the Central, it'd be a little tougher if you got to go to Nashville and St. Louis and then Chicago. Like, they're tougher to get to some of those cities. So they looked at it financially and said, well, yeah, getting to Vancouver, getting to Los Angeles, getting to Anaheim, getting to Vegas, like, it's easier, a lot easier to get to these centers than it is other places. And also easier for fans too. Let's say we wanted to go down on a road trip and the Oilers are playing, let's say, Vegas or LA and Anaheim, that's an easy road trip for fans to get to. There's direct flights to these cities. There's direct flights to LA, to Vegas, into Seattle. So I think the Oilers look at it in that regard as well. Like, if we want some of our fans to come on a road trip with us, it's easier for them to get to the Pacific Division than it would be to get to Nashville.
That's a very good point.
So I think that, I'm hoping that kind of was a factor as well. They look at their fan base and say, these guys like to travel. There's a lot of Oilers fans that go to Anaheim and go watch the Oilers play in Anaheim. Like, one, because the flights are relatively cheap to get to Los Angeles. It's a direct flight, and the tickets for the games are relatively cheap. And Anaheim is obviously a tourist city with Disneyland there. So I think that was another factor as well, that the Oilers wanted to stay in the Pacific Division.
The Oilers should have just, built 4,000 more seats at Rogers Place. I mean, that would have saved everybody so much money.
Yeah, exactly.
The big loser in this, is right now the Arizona Coyotes. Mm-hmm. Number one, they have to move to the Central Division, and they're super close to LA and Vegas, yeah, and San Jose, comparably. But at the same time, getting from Phoenix to those, Chicago, St. Louis, Minnesota, et cetera, I know they're chartering, but it is easier for them to do that trip than, say, Edmonton or Calgary having to do that. Also, number two, and I'm putting on my soothsayer's hat now.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be the Houston Coyotes eventually. Come on. Or maybe Portland.
You know what? They could be. Well, Portland would be an issue because Portland would have to be.
Never mind. Forget Portland. Forget I even said that. I meant Houston all the way.
But you know what? It could be Houston. It could be Kansas City. You're right.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee that the Arizona Coyotes will be in Arizona at 2021-2022 season. And Houston would be a natural fit to have a Texas rivalry there. You bring in, and Houston has had an American Hockey League team, and it would work, I think, in Houston. I do think it would work in Houston. I think it would work in Kansas City. So there's places that the NHL is looking at, and you look at Arizona, and how much money are you going to throw at this problem before you realize you're never going to fix it? There's an issue with Arizona. There's an issue there with the Coyotes. The Coyotes, they're not good. They've never been good. And no one comes to watch them play. So eventually, you're going to have to say, you know what, we gave it an honest effort in this market, and it didn't work out. And I know when I was there, people would talk about how they built the arena at the wrong side of town. They built it in Glendale. They should have built it somewhere else. They should have gone closer to downtown because it's a trek to get out there. And I know the football stadium is right beside it, and the football stadium is gorgeous, but you're only going out to the football stadium 10 times a year. You're going out to hockey games 41 times a year. And those Tuesday nights and Wednesday nights when you got to drive 40 minutes and then watch the game and then drive 40 minutes home, it's tough. It's tough to get fans out there. And I think it's a situation where I don't think anyone outside of Arizona, I don't think anyone outside of Phoenix would kind of miss the Coyotes. I think everyone else would say, you know what, they tried there. I know they don't like to move franchises a lot. Like Gary Bettman likes to keep his franchises where they are and try to make them work. But, yeah, I think they're looking down the road and they're saying, well, we'll keep the Arizona, we'll move Arizona to the Central because eventually they'll become the Houston whatevers.
Poor Portland, though. I mean, you talk about Seattle being a nice city. Mm-hmm. Well, Portland's a nice city, too. Mind you, Portland's not as big as Seattle.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about a population to draw from. But, you know, Portland would be a fine destination too.
Well, Portland's a great city. Like I've spent a lot of time there when the Oil Kings were playing the Winterhawks in the WHL final. So you're right. But Portland could not be in the Central. They'd have to be in the Pacific, and then someone else would get the boot out of that division. So, yeah. I think with Seattle, kind of, they look at that team kind of encompassing that whole kind of Pacific Northwest area.
Sure.
So, you know, become more of a Washington team than maybe just a Seattle-based team.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. You know, I don't know, maybe because I'm old, but I was looking forward to having the Oilers playing the Blackhawks a lot, mm-hmm. and then the Oilers playing the Minnesota North, I mean, Dallas Stars
yeah.
a lot. St. Louis, no. I was just thinking about the old playoff rivalries, but at the same time, I understand why the Oilers don't want to move divisions. Obviously, that's not going to happen. But I mean, you know, even though the team hasn't been in the playoffs, you know, 11 of the last 12 years, these rivalries with LA and with Anaheim, San Jose, you know, they're there. They exist. And obviously with Vancouver as well. There's obviously a long history of being in the same division with Vancouver.
Yeah, they do. And I think they've worked really hard at kind of developing those rivalries with San Jose and LA and Anaheim. And rivalries are developed in playoffs. And I think that's the one thing, is that in 2006, when the Oilers went on their playoff run, they went through San Jose, they went through Anaheim to get the Stanley Cup final. Same thing 2 years ago. They played San Jose, and then they had to play Anaheim, and that really developed that rivalry between the franchises. And the one with Calgary is always going to be there. There's always going to be there with Vancouver, just by the nature of the Canadian franchise. But I think they really wanted to keep building on those rivalries with the San Jose's and with the Anaheims and things like that. And I think fans really like it too. And I think it'd be tougher to build a rivalry with a St. Louis or with a Minnesota, with a Nashville. Like it's not the same. It doesn't have the same feel when those teams come in here. And maybe if they met in the playoffs, maybe that would change. But like geographically, it you know, St. Louis and Nashville, they're out there. Like you don't really know where they are per se. Like they're just out there, but you know, you're people are familiar with Anaheim and L.A. and
sure.
Seattle. And
never mind the reverse, too, like people in Nashville and St. Louis, you know, even though they might know where Edmonton is.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, people in L.A. don't always know where Edmonton is either. But
yeah, that's true.
Over time, they'll come to love it, maybe by the time, you know, the earth implodes and we're all dead.
Yeah.
But no, I'm kidding.
And there's always like, there's always going to be that Edmonton-L.A. connection because of Gretzky. Because Gretzky went from Edmonton to L.A. So if anything, hockey fans know Edmonton because, oh, that's where Wayne Gretzky came from.
Yeah. And right now, it's where Connor McDavid came from, as long as he's not sick.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully a speedy recovery for Connor McDavid because the Oilers do need him pretty badly, and I think it was evident by that that loss in Dallas.
That's our Oil Spills podcast for today. You can listen to our show via iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud.